Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity.
Well, welcome back to our Abound in Hope podcast. It's great to have you here. Thanks for listening. Just a quick reminder, if you don't remember, we've been in kind of a mental health series over the past few weeks, which has been wonderful. We've had Mary Faw with us, and it's been grateful to have her, as well as we talked a little bit of addictions last week. We're taking a little sidetrack from that today in something that is different in terms of we're talking about autism today, which is not a mental health issue. It's something different. We'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. But also, there was World Autism Day a few weeks ago, and we thought it'd just be something to talk about in the context of the church as well. And so I am grateful for some guests that I have. By the way, I didn't tell you, this is Darren Larson, which you may know my voice, but you don't know the voices with me, so I'm going to have them introduce themselves. With me are...
This is Mark Vilwak, and so I'm a dad of Corbin Vilwak, who is on the spectrum with autism. So, and then Heather is here with me as well.
Hi.
And also I have...
John Watkins, and I am also on the high end of the autism spectrum. Hmm.
Tell us what that is, what it's actually defined as then.
So... autism comes in a lot of different flavors. Essentially, you can think of it as your brain is wired differently from most other people. You'll note things in the person. For example, most people with autism have difficulty making eye contact when they talk to people. Hmm. I've noticed a few things, like, for example, I can read upside down almost as well as I can read right side up. It may just be a coincidence. Sometimes coordination difficulties will go along with it. People farther down the spectrum with more severe autism, you probably think about children who may have really bizarre behavior. You may see them apparently throwing temper tantrums in public. And I think the important thing to realize, since we don't have one of those people represented here, mm-hmm. is don't assume that it's behavioral. It's something they can't help. It's not that they're just being stubborn or mm-hmm. or having a temper tantrum.
That's great. So you mentioned we don't have someone who has that kind of disability in the context here. Maybe Heather, you could tell us a little bit about Corbin, because what Corbin and John both have in common is a certain type of autism. Can you give us a little explanation of what that is?
Corbin has, they diagnosed it autism 1, which means Asperger's, but he has tantrums. Now that he's older, they're getting better. But when he was little, we had quite the experiences with his tantrums. And that's where the therapies and specialists come in very handy. Mm-hmm. But he, for us, the definition of autism is just simply Corbin.
Oh, yeah.
Because all autism is different. Mm-hmm. There's not one autism case that is exactly the same. Huh. You know, Corbin comes across very normal.
Yep.
But he is not.
Yeah.
And which is good. That's how God made him. Yeah. And that's how we, you know, love him. And
how old is he now?
He's 14.
Yeah. And when did you start noticing some of these things that were like, okay, maybe something else is going on here?
I knew something was off when he was, you know, like 16, 18 months. But we didn't get the diagnosis until he was 5. Just from different things that were happening. But what was hard was testing him. He's also dyslexic. He has dyslexia, mm-hmm. dysgraphia, dyscalculia, which is he sees everything backwards. So the testing part was
interesting.
Hard.
You have a bit of that, John, where you can read things upside down.
Yeah, and I'm mildly dyslexic.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting. I didn't really notice it until I was a teenager. I learned to type, and then I found out that I was dyspeptic also.
Huh.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was hard to test him because he couldn't read what he needed to read. He couldn't, he can comprehend
yeah.
like crazy, yep. but he can't read. Huh. Even now he can't, it's really hard for
huh.
him.
Huh.
So
That it's a, so I guess I should pause and say, thank you guys for sharing your stories. I mean, this is pretty amazing. I didn't say that after you got introducing yourselves, but we kind of jumped right in. But man, it's this is probably a little bit emotionally raw and some of those things. Although in some ways, it's probably your life story. I mean, John, can you tell us a little bit about how you've learned? I mean, you're very successful. What do you do? Tell us what you do, John.
I am a pharmacist. I currently am a residency program director, work for the local Blue Cross plan. And I've been a pharmacist for over 40 years. Actually, took me a while to get there. It's interesting because God knows what he wants to do with you. I wish he would give us more advance warning sometimes.
Right.
I never started out to be this, and yet it's where I ended up. And I was not diagnosed until I was over 50. I'm 72 now, which means I come from a time when we didn't know about most of these things. And so, of course, I would have been picked up in school. And I wasn't. And I actually, the reason that I got diagnosed is because I also have ADHD, which again is a neurological condition. And people with autism often have that. And also there are several other things they may have too. So I was diagnosed when I was over 50. I actually self-diagnosed. I was reading, I was reading an ADHD practice guideline. And I started thinking, this sounds awfully familiar. So I went and got tested. Everybody is a little different. The other thing I found out, I went through a full 3-hour one-on-one with a specialist IQ test. And so you get a whole, you get a profile. And the other thing that I had never figured out is the way that she explained it. She said, you have a pretty high IQ, but you, if you think of your brain as a computer CPU, it's normal speed, which suddenly explained why I've always felt inefficient. I basically, I have more ideas than I can ever execute because I can't do them fast, and I can't do them as fast as I can think of them. So that's just an example, but you learn that whatever you have going on, you have strengths. God doesn't make mistakes. He also, something I just heard from a speaker the other day is God didn't need to make you. He chose to. He's self-sufficient. He doesn't need us. It's not like he's lonely. So therefore, he definitely knew what he was doing and there was a purpose behind it.
That's so cool. What a good reminder, because I think a lot of times we can think there's something broken in a person that caused the autism. But what if we rearrange our thinking a little bit and say there's something actually really special and incredible about a person who has autism,
right?
That although it's challenging, and there are certain challenges, I imagine that you guys can probably speak more into those, but to think that God has created that person uniquely and wonderfully made, like Jeremiah tells us, is beautiful. Mark, can I ask you a question? So like, what was it like when you guys were first kind of diagnosing Corbin and kind of working? Like, how as a parent did you, how did you deal with that? How did that work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, Heather can get into the really nitty-gritty detail of it, but just even as being a dad, you know, it's, you know, some of it is just, you know, learning to kind of meet Corbin, you know, where he's at. And then for me, not being around him like all the time, all day, because I'm going to work and coming back, is just trying to decipher, you know, kind of when, you know, is the behavior in the moment, is it more, you know, stemming from kind of his autism and Asperger's, or is it he's just misbehaving, or is he just being a 5-year-old, you know? And it's like, instead of just having two buckets as a normal parent, you have like this third bucket that you're trying to juggle. And won't say that I've done it perfectly by any means, but certainly it's something, you know, just to be, you know, just to be aware of, you know, as you parent, that, you know, you, there's you know, can be this, you know, other things going on that you kind of have to,
to
be aware of. And it could be autism or anything, you know, mental health related or other type things that make it, you know, a little more difficult.
That's a really good and helpful way to think about it. The buckets illustration, right. Like you're not dealing with just two buckets, you're dealing with a third bucket here. With that said, I maybe you'd mentioned some of the common experiences that Corbin had growing up. Are there some other common experiences with a person with autism and some experience from different parts of the spectrum that we can kind of learn from? Like if you were to identify or say like, how do you handle that? Or how does a person who's on the spectrum know how to handle their own kind of emotions or behaviors or the thoughts that you guys have on that at all?
Well, one thing, a lot of people on the spectrum, they're terrified of bugs. Anything that flies, any insect that flies. Corbin, this giant 14-year-old kid, still runs from a fly. Like, it's quite funny to watch.
Corbin's like 6'1". He's just a big 14-year-old, size 14 feet or something like that.
Exactly.
He just is terrified of little bugs.
Yeah.
And so you learn those little quirks, like his closet light and Lego room light have to be on at all times, even when we're not home. Yeah, I could lie to them and say that they're on, but I don't lie to my children. So they're just on at all times.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just little quirks like that. Huh. You just kind of learn. And like with Mark was saying, parenting, you know, there's been a few times where I have to tell him, no, that was a Aspie thing, not a 5-year-old thing.
You guys' communication even.
Right.
Like, to say like, I imagine because parenting is a it's got to be a tag team affair. Otherwise, we'll lose our minds. Right. But has that helped a little bit to say, like, I think that's Asperger's. I think that's not a behavioral thing.
Yeah. And what's hard, too, is when you have other children, you really have to learn to parent the child, not the children.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as parents, we're going to parent our children the same way. They're gonna have the same rules, the same whatever. And you can't Paige has other rules, and you know, we expect different things from her than Corbin. And
Paige is 16, is that correct?
Yeah. So, we're not big on TV for the kids, but Corbin, that was his coping mechanism when he was little. So, I mean, to this day, Paige doesn't watch TV because Corbin isn't charge of it, you know. So, you know, she can only watch so many like dump truck movies and machinery movies.
That's great.
But that was his coping mechanism. And so as much as we didn't like that, that's what, for me, being home a lot by myself with him and his tantrums and his size, that's how I can contain him. So we just watch a lot of PBS. You know, it's all learning stuff. It's all stuff that interests him, like machines. So
that's great.
Yeah.
John, can you speak a little bit about some of the experiences that you've had, knowing that you've been placed on the spectrum as well? How does that, what are some of the experiences you've had as an individual?
Yeah. And most people with autism have unusual interests. I went to college in New York City and got interested in mass transit systems. I have ridden every mile of the New York subways.
Wow.
Which in those days you could get in for 20 cents and ride all day if you wanted, as long as you didn't leave the station.
Right.
People have various different, and it may seem be something quirky, but even a severely autistic person may be really good at something that's under there.
Right.
Which, by the way, we don't have a representative here from that end, but if you want to know about it, Emily Colson's book, Dancing with Max, does a really nice job of explaining that. Max, for example, one of his fascinations is commercial refrigerator cases, like you go to the grocery store and he examined them. He knew everything about them. And wherever you went, you had to go look at the refrigerators.
And he was an expert at those things, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So that is a little bit of a preconceived idea that I have about a person with autism, is that there usually is sometimes a hyper focus on some topic or something like that. Is that true or is that not true? Is that kind of like, I know everyone's person is different, but does that seem to be something with autism, a person with autism would kind of face?
Corbin hyper lost the word.
hyper focuses.
Thank you. On anything that he likes. Huh. So it's very like forging. He's very into forging for like 6 months.
That's right.
Last summer, very into making wooden desks. Huh. So I had like 7 desks in the garage that needed to not be there. He hyper focuses on so many different things.
Huh.
But we've learned that one, it keeps him busy.
Yeah.
And two, when he gets that thought, he has to do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right. Your life is miserable. So
yeah. You
just let your 11-year-old play with hot fire and metal. Like, yes. You know,
because you're talking forging, like old
like
school.
Making knives. Yeah. Yes.
Pounding
molten
metal or something like that. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
So, you know, or driving tractors or trucks or working on cars. Like, he loves it. So let him do it. And hopefully God will keep him safe.
Yeah, right. Right now he's sitting at home waiting to go to the O'Reilly's parts store to pick up a new carburetor for the 84 Chevy pickup truck we're working on in the garage. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's all he can think about right now is working on that pickup.
John, can I ask you if this helped you in your profession of pharmaceuticals? Like, did you find? I mean, you said first of all, mass transit was interesting to you, but has pharmaceuticals been something that was a focus for you?
Yeah, and before I became a pharmacist, I was actually studying chemistry. That's more normal. Basically, I just had a really good high school chemistry teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those people who was very inspiring. Oh, I should mention, too, when I was in elementary school, an example of where I could have gone off the tracks, but I had a good teacher. She was my third grade teacher. And so we were doing arithmetic problems, and I had my own way of working the problem, which was not what the book was teaching. And she was smart enough to kind of watch me and say, okay, I see how you do that. You're going to get the right answer. Do it your way, instead of saying, no, you have to do it this way because this is what the book says you do.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool because it seems like a person actually kind of helped you instead of just judging you or just saying, I hear that from both Mark and Heather and from you, is that you needed people in your lives to actually give you a chance in a sense of like, there's a different learning style here. There's a different way of viewing the world here. And if you don't kind of help that person, then you're going to be frustrated or angry or it's another bucket, as to use that language.
Mm-hmm. There's also a different type of hyperfocus that people with ADHD have. So it's not like you're always inattentive, but when you focus, you're totally, I can hyperfocus for a couple of hours and be extremely productive.
Huh.
You could almost blow up the building around me and I wouldn't notice.
Right.
But you know, when I was in high school, I ruined a set of clothes because I was working in the chemistry lab over a lunch hour. There wasn't supposed to be anybody else there, but I was the TA and I was setting up an experiment. Somebody walked up behind me and said something to me and I flinched with the test tube in my hand.
All over your clothes.
It went on my... went on my clothes. Fortunately, didn't hurt me. So if you have that situation, you try to organize your life again. If you know you have it, you can leverage that.
So let me ask another question, maybe for all of you. It's the sense of like, what are some common misconceptions that people might have about autism then? Or how do you kind of destigmatize the idea of autism as well for people so that a person's not afraid of a person with autism? Or is there things that we can kind of say like, here's a misconception that I can fix for you, and this is the way to kind of get around that? Just any thoughts on that, for especially for kids that are growing up with it, I imagine.
Again, it's not everyone is the same.
Yeah.
They're all different. And especially when it comes to kids in school, in elementary school especially, you need to find people like you that had teachers that want to help.
Yeah.
You know, that understand and are willing to listen to the parent, because the parent knows the child the best, right?
Yeah.
So
yep.
We came across that quite a bit with Corbin. So there, and it was surprising how many teachers just wanted to teach him the way they taught other kids on the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not Corbin.
Yeah.
So,
because not all autistic thing cases are the same.
Right.
They're all, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like he did kindergarten twice, and his second year teacher listened to me and did what I asked or told her. If he does this, do that. Mm. If he does this, it means this. Like, don't be afraid to ask the parent, because that's kind of what we're there for. You know?
So I think some people have a little nervousness of like bringing it up. Are you guys nervous about talking about it? You know, that's like, okay.
I don't trust a lot of people with Corbin.
Yeah, sure.
And so I've been known to leave lists of, like I was just saying, if Corbin hides under the table, it's because he's doing this. If he puts his hood on, it's because he wants to feel invisible. Like,
oh, interesting.
There's just certain things that, because I want to help people understand. I don't want people to get frustrated with him.
Yep.
And so I do that so that people aren't frustrated. Now, some people choose not to follow that.
Yep.
And then they regret it. But
that's something that Emily Colson talks about. You have to be an advocate for your child.
Yeah. Huh.
And sometimes you have to be in their face. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate that I didn't need that much, and I had good teachers. Another example, when I was in seventh grade, math teacher noticed that my grades were sort of dropping over the course of the fall of that year. It was because I was bored.
So
he got me after class one day and said, how do you like to be in eighth grade math instead of seventh grade?
Huh.
So I went home and thought about it and said, yeah, I'll do that. And immediately problem solved, because it was more challenging.
Interesting.
And I was able to maintain the interest. Mm-hmm.
So can I bring back a story from probably 10 years ago when I first met you, John? We had lunch together at a Mexican restaurant in Kirkland. And I remember you saying to me right off the bat, you just paused. I didn't know you at all. I just met you at church. And you said to me, I just wanted you to know that I'm on the spectrum, on the autistic spectrum. And so if I don't look you in the eyes, or if I seem kind of odd to you, then that's why. And I remember, like, it was so helpful. Like, I don't know how else to explain it except for just going, I don't know if I would have thought much of that or thought of you anyway, but it actually helped me place you in some ways, to say, like, not judging you or not like putting you in a corner, but just realizing that. Is that hard to do for you, to tell people things like that? Or is it helpful? Do you find it like to be...
I don't tell everybody, but I do tell some people, as well as I will freely tell people that I have ADHD.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the psychologist that did my testing told me that I was eligible for special accommodations is the legal term for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This goes back to the Americans with Disabilities Act. I have never needed to ask for it. That's a tribute to my employer, that in the nearly 20 years since I learned that I have never needed to ask. Huh. But I could, for example, when I was taking tests like the SAT, I could have used extra time.
Huh.
I never could finish those things. Fortunately, I did well enough on the part I could finish to get into a good college. But I was entitled to be given time to answer all the questions.
That's So that's interesting to know that stuff, so that you can able to help a person and maybe even understand their giftings better in a sense from that. So let me ask another question to maybe Mark and Heather real briefly here. This is kind of going off script a little bit, but what would you say to a parent who's wondering if their child has autism around the spectrum, or if they're in the throes of like trying to deal with some of the different behavioral challenges and stuff that come up with that? What are some things you might say?
First, ask your GP questions. Then we were sent to a neuropsychologist, because they are the ones that diagnose it, and trust them. And if you have a bad feeling, then get a second opinion. Like that, I think that's kind of the key to start the process. Prayer.
Certainly.
You got to pray through it. Yeah. Because there are some challenging times. Yeah. Corbin's also a redhead, which means he's very stubborn.
Right.
So I want to go on record saying Corbin is an awesome dude. I mean, I am so, I'm like compelled by Corbin because he's like this kid that knows all the things that an adult man should know. Like, so I go over one day. So Mark, you guys had felled some trees in your house and you let me take some wood for for our camping firewood. And so Corbin comes out driving the tractor to put the trailer on my truck, you know? And I'm like, there's no parents around. He's like the 14-year-old knows how to do everything. He does. Corbin is a dude. I mean, he's an amazing kid.
Well, and that, I guess that's another preconception about kids with autism. They prefer adults.
Huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They prefer to hang out with adults, to be friends with adults. Huh. It's weird, but you learn to know which adults to trust with your kid and you let them learn. And that's kind of what Corbin does. He'd rather be with adults. And that helps because also when you're on the spectrum, you can't read facial cues, and tones of voice, and which is a blessing because when kids make fun of you, you don't get it.
Oh, right. Oh, of course.
Yeah. So instead of finding the negative in that, I focus on that part.
Yeah.
Like he'll come home and tell me something and in my head, I'm like, right, I'm making fun of you.
Kids are the worst.
But he had no clue that, I mean, I didn't tell him that, but he just thought it was a funny situation.
And they can also have somewhat of a short-term memory. Like if they have a bad day, like the next day is kind of a new day almost. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, if they were made fun of or something else, they can just kind of hit reset, you know, with the new day and then it's all better. And wanted to back up too, you know, just on if you're a parent, just kind of wondering, like certainly even here at Imprint Church, I think is a great resource with some of the adults that are, especially in the early beginnings, kind of, you know, there's Heather and Marcy and others that are just professionals, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And feel free to ask them questions too, if you're wondering, you know, because there's certainly people here within Imprint that we've, you know, that kind of that understand it and have watched Imprint kids, you know, go through it, you know, so that's certainly a huge resource.
I've heard the teachers and Sunday school teachers are some of the best kind of references for learning if a child has autism or not, because they're outside of home and they're acting a little differently. And maybe your normal is different than the, you know, at home is different than normal you experience in the classroom or in the Sunday school or something like that.
Yeah.
So, So let me ask another question here. What can the church, if you will, what can our church body learn from someone with autism? What would be kind of some things that would be like, man, because every person offers gifts to the body of Christ, you know? So how can we as a church learn? Maybe you're a person listening to this podcast. You're like, I don't have autism. I don't know anyone with autism, but maybe you do actually. And what can the church learn from someone with autism?
I think one big thing is, too, is just being gracious with one another because all of us aren't perfect, right? And so, for example, you know, Corbin did the slides at the prayer night we just had.
Oh, cool.
And he has
he can't read that fast.
Right.
So me sitting in the back is like, please let him switch the slides. Please let him, you know,
like,
know, but thankfully people here are willing to let him try. If has an interest, Ben will let him try. And it's refreshing to know that they're patient with him.
Right.
You know, and we'll teach him, you know, because he usually is just guessing. Like, he's like, I think I change it now, you know?
That's great. So, yeah. And he did it well.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess the way to frame it kind of is don't let the perfect get away in way of the good,
that's
right?
Great.
Allow people, you know, good is good enough. And I think Imprint has done a really good job of that, of allowing people to serve. It doesn't have to be perfect. You know, and kind of come alongside people and really allow them to be part of the body is hugely important. And then through that, relationships can be built and everyone is edified, you know, through the body for sure.
Yeah. Well, that really shows the value of truly believing that every person is created in a beautiful way. As John mentioned even earlier, God didn't make mistakes, right?
Like
this is a cool thing to note. And if you're actually allowing people to use their gifts, it shows that you believe that not only individually, but as a community too. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, John, on how you kind of, as maybe you're an adult now and you've been in the church for years and years, how can the church value the gifts that God's given to you?
I think you hit it right on. Basically, find out what that person can do. we need all kinds of people. I have a quote here from Emily that I thought was particularly telling. She talked about how Max he was drawn to church, was baptized as I think about 12 or 13 year old, but he couldn't bear to be in the service and they'd have to watch it from outside. But she says, everyone who enters any sanctuary is scarred and messy with a history of failures. It's just that only some of us show it on the outside, too.
Wow.
Right.
So we all have something that we wish we didn't. Some of us can hide it better than others.
That's an amazing quote. Back up real quick to going back to what you guys have talked a little bit about, just the fact that everyone is created really uniquely. I was thinking about this in terms of Exodus and the Moses story, when the Lord's telling him to go to Pharaoh and to confront him and bring the Israelites out into the Promised Land. And it's so funny because you probably know the story in Exodus where Moses is just angry and arguing and all this kind of stuff. And it's so funny because finally it gets down to kind of end it. And he says, like, I am not, I think it's Exodus 4:10. I can't speak well. Like, I'm slow of speech and tongue. And a lot of people believe that means he had a stuttering problem or something mm-hmm. was really wrong with the way he would actually speak. Mm-hmm. And so the Lord says to him in verse 11 of chapter 4, who made the man's mouth, you know, who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Right. And go for now, and I will be your mouth and teach you what to speak. And of course, the end of the story is kind of funny because he's like, please send someone else. And so he sends his brother. But
right.
But the cool part is, like, I love the Lord's response. He's like, I did this on purpose. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't create you horribly. I didn't make a mistake. And mm-hmm. and I love that. I can sit here with people who have had to deal with autism in their own life, or someone they love who has autism. And yet they can also say right here, man, the Lord has created this person, or John, as we sit here with them, with gifts and abilities mm-hmm. and special. I think that's such a really cool thing. Are there any other things that you guys would want to share in terms of, like, resources or thoughts in terms of autism that would be helpful for us?
I think, too, you should don't be afraid to talk to your child about their diagnosis. Hmm. I've had a lot of people tell me not to do that. I've been in a situation where I'm talking to a family member and another family member goes, shh, he's coming in the room. Don't keep talking, you know? So that, to me, that's not okay.
Yeah.
I think, cause one, Corbin was a child. He doesn't know what's going on, you know, with his body and his brain. And, so you have to talk to him about it.
Yeah. And you do that regularly, is that correct?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We explain things. I think he was third grade maybe, and we found a book for him to take to class called All Cats Have Asperger Syndrome. And it's like the best kids book to explain Asperger's.
I buy that. If that's the thesis, I'm in.
Yes, yeah. And it's just a simple picture kids book, and it really just hits on the points, and it makes people understand a little bit easier. And there are other books that, like, I give to the family members, and because, you know, our parents' age and older tend not to have a full understanding.
Interesting, yeah.
About it.
And John kind of mentioned that.
Yeah. And I actually had a family member say a couple years ago, well, it seems like he might be growing out of it. Nope, that's not happening.
Yeah. Will that ever happen, out of curiosity? Is there a chance that this could, signs or symptoms could lessen over the years?
Yes, if you are in the right therapies and specialists.
Okay.
Corbin was a lot worse off.
Yep.
And then we did about a decade of therapies.
Yeah.
He goes to a special school that catered to him. And a lot of it, too, is his other disabilities that he has. But
Sure.
It's resources. Books are the best.
Yeah.
Psychologists are the best. The specialists, talk to them.
Yep.
They know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I hear you saying, don't be afraid to ask questions
yeah.
to parents and yeah. people. Like, because it feels like to me,
a person with a kind of a neurological disability, mm-hmm. it feels like that you wouldn't want to bring that up because it feels right. like the awkward, like elephant in the room right. that you don't want to say. But I'm hearing you guys say, actually, let's change that. Let's yeah. let's flip the script on that. Is that correct?
It's not a mental health condition.
Yep.
And early treatment is very important. Mm-hmm. So
right.
if you suspect that you have a child with autism, mm-hmm. do that work up quickly. Mm. And I know I wish I had known before, if nothing else, just knowing that I'm not a bad person. It's just the way that God made me. It's very freeing mm-hmm. to know that.
Mm. And the sooner you teach your child not to be embarrassed of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we tend to focus on the positive with Corbin. You know, you're an ASPE kid, so you hyper-focus. Mm-hmm. So you'll learn a lot about certain, you know, like mm-hmm. make it a positive thing.
Right. And certainly find those teachers out there and fight for the teachers that really enjoy the kid,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
really want to help them and get creative in helping them really lean into what they're interested in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of teachers, I mean, they're busy and it may just not be a fit, but that's, yeah. you know, something as a parent, something you really have to fight for is finding the right spot for your
kid. Which
is
really
kid.
Hard to do.
Yeah.
I bet.
It takes a lot of time and energy.
But
and
you probably feel like a helicopter parent in some ways. Yes. Over yes. that, but you probably have to.
But yeah. there is help out there, especially in the public school system. Mm. They will fight you at every turn, but you just keep going.
Yeah.
Go to the highest person if you have to, because they have the resources and the money to help you.
Yeah.
And for somebody like me who's not a fighter, I'd just rather go, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's very, you learn a lot. But it's for your child.
To advocate for your kiddo.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
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 Have you seen, so I go back to the question I asked a minute ago, have you seen in your own life that your symptoms of Asperger's have kind of decreased over the years? Or do you feel like, I'm just curious, that mm-hmm. Heather's like, nope, I don't think that's what's going to happen yeah. here. That's probably not a great question to ask, right?
But yeah, like, not really. But then see? Again, yeah. I wasn't diagnosed at an age that later. It would have mattered. By the way, one other resource, if you have the ADHD component of it, a book that I did find really helpful is called Driven to Distraction.
Hmm.
It's
is that mainly about ADHD or
yeah,
is that? Okay.
It's all right. About ADHD.
Yeah.
It's a common issue, which also didn't used to be diagnosed.
Yes.
The author, it's a physician, he says a lot of times I will be talking to parents about a kid that I've diagnosed and explaining what's going on. And all of a sudden, dad is looking at me like, this is awfully familiar sounding. But about a third, there's about a third chance of it going from one generation to the next in the same family.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
But that book was really helpful in terms of practical suggestions and, again, ways to learn to work with that. And whatever else you may have along with the autism, again, if you get a thorough diagnostic workup, they'll tell you all that and can point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think if you're listening, hear from the experiences of folks to be willing to kind of step sometimes into the awkward space mm-hmm. and ask the right question. And even if it feels a little weird to do that, I think it may even give permission for people in the church to be honest and share mm-hmm. a little bit. And I think that's a cool takeaway from that, to be reminded of that. Mm-hmm. So is there anything, I think the final question I'll ask, is there anything the church can do in building disciples and making disciples, grateful and generous disciples, to help people who are on the spectrum at all that would be helpful from either a leadership perspective or just in terms of groups or public gatherings or whatever it is? Actually, John sent me an article this last week on like 17 things that your church can do to help someone with autism, you know, mm-hmm. and I read them and I was super discouraged. I was like, oh, yeah. crud, we're not doing most of those. And then some of them actually conflict with what we're trying to do to help people like in other ways, you sure. know, like, for example, one of the things on there was like, don't use screens to project words or something because it can be distracting.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, like, what do you do then? How do you make it? So it's really hard, like to accommodations for sure. every person is really difficult. But with that said, is there anything the church can do to help? I think you can think of.
I think Imprint's always been good with kids who are different, they always find a way to get them involved. Years ago when we would do like the barbecues here, you know,
dude,
Corbin was like,
cooked.
Yes, he cooked. Because he had to.
I totally remember that.
Yeah, he just had to do it. And, you know, you guys were good at just, okay, we'll let Corbin cook.
It was awesome when he cooked. Yeah.
So it's just, that's nice to know that there's a safe place for him. But again, like you were saying, you know, the screens could be distracting or whatever. Part of having a child with autism is teaching them how to cope with things that are distracting.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of, it's a constant teaching process with them. You know, Paige, you can tell her one thing and she'll remember it forever. Corbin, it's like a daily, a daily thing. So, but I think the church does really well.
That's cool. Well, you said Corbin also serves in the parking team, you know, and he probably he probably takes that pretty seriously, I imagine, out there serving and helping.
Yeah, it comes in phases, like most things, Corbin. But when he's so it's but yeah, it's good, and just being gracious with each other. I mean, it may not be autism, it may be something else, but just, you know, if a student in like the elementary classes isn't following the social norms, you know, and stuff, it's like, you know, just really taking the time to really understand what's going on and talking to the parents and that sort of thing is important. I think that's something that the imprint does do fairly well and something we need to continue to do. And even with adults, you know, if they're not following the social norms, like just talk to them, you know, find out, you know, there may be a reason behind it, you know, and that's just, you know, maybe their role. It's okay. You know, if they, you know, if they are, you know, can't go inside the sanctuary like Max, you know, maybe there's another way they can get involved in the parking lot or whatever else it may be.
That's cool.
But just, you know, try to be gracious and just get creative in how to plug people into the body.
Great. Final thoughts, John, from you on that?
Yeah, that's why I'm a parker, by the way, because I wouldn't be a good greeter because I'm not good at having casual conversations with people. I think what we've been saying about school teachers applies. It's the same thing. Basically, you want people in your Sunday school program that have that same orientation, and pastors, church leaders, basically the more people understand and the more you're looking for people who are different in whatever way it may be, that there's now a politically correct term. They call this neurodiversity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it just emphasizes that there's no stereotype. You have to learn each person as they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys, this has been super helpful, and I am absolutely grateful that you'd be willing to share your stories with us, and thank you for that. I think that that book, again, is actually Mary Faw, strangely enough, sent me the, she spoke at a Colson Fellows thing, I think, and shared Max's story. Her name's Emily, is that right, Emily?
Yeah, Emily. She's Chuck Colson's daughter.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you get the audio book, you can hear her read it. And then there's a preface and a post epilogue that were written by Chuck. And so he reads those parts.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, it's really great. I mean, she shares the story, and kind of the truth is that it seems like everyone's crying by the time the thing is done, which is the story of making a disciple out of Max, if you will, or seeing Max become a disciple of Christ. So that was pretty cool. So check out that at some point. Check out All Cats Have Asperger Syndrome.
It's a good one. Really fast read.
And if you have questions, send us an email, because I'm sure the Vilwalks or John would be willing to share and share their experiences or share their resources. John even sent me some articles before this podcast and said, if people ask questions, here's some things you can send them to and send to them, excuse me. And so we have those available. So if you have any thoughts on that, please let us know. Otherwise, thank you guys so much for being here today, and thanks for sharing your story. This was more helpful than I can even imagine. So, so we'll see you guys next week on the Abound in Hope podcast. Otherwise, have a great week.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.